Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Can I do the sexy voice, my quiet, stern voice?
Yes, please do that. Give us one.
Okay. So after Rome, amazing outro. This has been Pina Tillman and Roman Harper. And thank you all for tuning in to the NFL Player Second X podcast. We talk to y'all later. We out. Oh, that was nice. No?
That was terrible.
That didn't do nothing to you?
That didn't do anything. You gave me no enthusiasm. Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing. At least act like you're trying to sleep with me if you're going to do all that. Give me something.
I just did. That was it. That was my Hail Mary. Didn't do nothing to you.
Get that out of here. You got batted down.
I got it. All right. I just got to work on it. Thank y'all for tuning in to this week's episode of the NFL Player Second Acts podcast. I'm one of the hosts, Peanut Tillman. And as always, I got my guy with me, the Deacon, Roman Harper. What up, Rome?
What's up, Peanut? And you don't always have me. Sometimes I actually go a little bit of a solo act on this thing.
You do.
Last week we had Eric Wood, the former Buffalo Bills center. Great dude, amazing man of faith. He has his own podcast. Really, really great dude. And also, he gave me a little bit of info, Peanut. He said, you know, Roman, write down three things you're thankful for every morning that you wake up. You know what? I've implemented this in my life, Peanut. It hasn't been a bad thing.
How's that been going?
It's been going pretty good. Only thing that's bad is that I put it on a dry erase board in front of my mirror in my bathroom, and it wasn't like dry erase pen. So it's kind of been stuck there for like 3 days now. All right. Well, look, how about this? How about all the listeners out there? I want to say personally, thank you, Charles and I do. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Could you continue to spread the word about this podcast? Give us, a rating, a review. Make sure you hit that follow button as well. And to wherever else you listen to your podcast at, whether it's Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio app, or wherever else you listen to, make sure you click subscribe to this podcast. We're going to keep giving you more and more information, more and more former players talking about their all second acts and really diving into so much of their these former players' great lives.
To all those listening right now, we don't have any guests today. It's just going to be Roman and I. We're the guests. We're going to attempt to interview each other. One, not difficult, but I know a lot about him, so I'm going to try to peel back some of the onion and get him to open up about some things that I possibly don't know. So we're going to treat this like a normal episode, and Rome and I will be interviewing each other.
All right, man, don't be whispering, man, making it all weird, bro. It's good. We're just
gonna talk
about each other's second acts. We've asked all the questions. We haven't answered any. So I think this is a good time to kind of dive in, Peanut. Let's do this thing, bro. You want to?
So let me give your I'll kick it off. First, like we do with everybody, I got to read your resume. So you were a second round draft pick out of University of Alabama, 2006.
Tie.
Played 11 years in the NFL. You made two Pro Bowls. Been in two Super Bowls. You're 1-1. You won the Super Bowl in 2009 with the Saints. Recently inducted into the New Orleans Saints Hall of Fame. And now you're a broadcaster with the SEC Network and somewhat of a professional golfer in your own mind.
Dude, that is one of my goals, is that I just want to make the cut on the senior tour. That's it. So I got to, I'm like 50, 60, 70. But and the best thing about making the cut is that there is no cut. So if I just show up, I'm going to make the cut. All right, let me read Peanut's resume. You ready for this? Peanut, he played 13 seasons in the NFL. He was also a two-time Pro Bowler and made a first-team All-Pro in 2012. He played in two Super Bowls. He won none. It's okay. All right? It happens. It wasn't his fault. In 2013, he was the Walter Payton Man of the Year, which is one of the best honors you can get throughout the NFL. Everybody knows about it. You actually get a special shield on your jersey from that moment on to carry on your legacy. Not everybody has that. So that's a special one right there. He's the creator of the Peanut Punch. He, a.k.a. now, is a turnover liaison, I would say. He kind of goes throughout the league and kind of helps teams create turnovers or preaches to them about that. He's also in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. That's really cool. Now he's an international man of mystery who's done TV. He's had a book written about him, which we have in our house right now for our kids. And he runs the Charles Tillman Cornerstone Foundation.
So now that we got that all done, we got some good resumes.
Hold on. I got to ask one question, though.
Yes, sir.
Something that was on your resume. Two Super Bowl losses. Which one hurt more?
Probably the second one because I didn't get a chance to play in it.
Yeah.
And I really think that – I'm not going to say I was a missing piece to us winning Super Bowl 50, but I really think that – I think I could have helped.
Well, there's no doubt you could have helped.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I think I could have helped, and it hurt more because I wasn't actually on the field. I tore my ACL the last game of the season. But if I could do it all over again, I wouldn't change anything. You know, I partially tore my ACL, I don't know, halfway through the season, sat out 3 weeks, and just said, you know what, this is a great team. I'm rolling the dice. I know it's partially torn. It'll never heal. I'll have to get it healed or repaired at one point. I'm going to roll the dice. And I'm proud enough to say that I actually played 5 games with a partially torn ACL in the National Football League, and I still held it down. Punching out balls, getting interceptions, like I still was able to do my job. And I literally put everything on the line for that 2015 season for us in Carolina. And great group of guys, great group of men. You and I, just the entire city of Charlotte, that was a very special year for myself and my family.
You know,
it was a good time.
It was great. I got to meet your family for really the first time in that one season that you came here. Our wives hit it off. We're great friends, still continue to be great friends. You know, I remember when you partially torn your ACL, which there is no partially for all those out there. You can't partially tear an ACL. Like, well, you can, but it's a torn ACL at the end of the day. You were a true warrior. I couldn't believe that you actually came back and played some games after it. You had a huge knee brace on. And just the fact of you continue to battle through for that, man, it really meant the world to that team, to us as a group. And I got a better understanding of who you are. And I just want the people to know that. I didn't think you were going to say Carolina, but since you did, I just want to put that out there that my man battled through it and nobody knew until it was all dead and gone.
Why don't we tell everyone how you and I feel like this is a date. This feels so weird, but like how, because I was going to say how our relationship started, but that sounds so wrong.
Our friendship started literally because we were in the same small group, breakout group at PAO, which is this Christian conference where the NFL puts on, and well, outside the NFL, but it's mostly NFL guys. And then we bring in all these speakers and sing, and it was really great. And all of a sudden, the conversation started opening up. And I knew who you were, but I never got a chance to meet you. And it was really good to just lean on you and lean on some other couples right there. And we started to build a friendship. And then from there, we really didn't talk a lot. And then all of a sudden, you became my teammate. And we just like hit it off. We were the two older guys in the room. And the funny thing about it all was that Peanut was like the happy-go-lucky person, I would say, in the room. Like, always joking, kept everything loose. He had the corners, I had the safeties. And that's what we did. And me and Peanut hung out and became thick as thieves, bro. We hung out all the time. I truly, truly, our friendship has only grown since then. And our families as well. Like, all our families know each other and they all hang out. And they all get along. It's great. All the kids, everybody.
So after that season, I had to call it quits.
Okay, right? Hold on. Before you get there, I want to ask you one more thing about this 2015 season.
Okay.
And that is that I want one or two great stories from that season, because I don't think people understand that 2015 Panthers team was a team that kind of like took the NFL by storm. We burst on the scene. We weren't even supposed to be that good. We weren't that good the year before. We did limp into the playoffs and won a playoff game with 7-8-1. And then show up. We traded for Jared Allen at one point in the season. So we had like this great group of like older guys who really did some cool stuff. And so it was a funny team. Everybody remembers Cam Newton dabbing, but we had the whole world dabbing at one point in time. Tell me like one or two hilarious stories from that season or from that locker room, because it's plenty to go along.
The alligator.
Oh, I was going to say, if you didn't bring up that one, I was going to do that one. I still got video of that.
So our offensive coordinator,
Mike Shula,
he tells us a story about the 72 Dolphins with his old man, Don Shula. And to sum it all up, someone had put an alligator in Don Shula's shower for the 72 Dolphins. They had that perfect season, right? He tells us the same story. We lose the game. We lost to Atlanta. So now we're like 13-1.
We were 14.
Or 14-1, excuse me. Everyone got super uptight in, you know, the building, the coaches, the players.
All this.
So I went out and bought this fake alligator. And I said, you know what? I'm going to loosen everybody up. I throw this alligator in Coach Rivera's locker. And I get there at like 5 that morning. Fast forward, I'm telling you and Curtis, like, yo, I just put this fake alligator in Rivera's Chico's locker, man. It's going to be hilarious. And all of a sudden, you see Coach Rivera walk around the corner, and he's barefoot and his shirt's out. He's always got his shirt tucked in. And he comes around the corner looking like Edward James Almost from damn Stand and Deliver. And he starts walking toward us, and he was like, you, get over here. And I was like, oh. And I'm not going to lie, I got scared. It was like, you know, when your old man tell you something, you get scared, like you in trouble. And I'm 34 years old. I'm a grown-ass man. But I was nervous. And he walks up to me, and I was like, I need to lie. Did you put that alligator in my shower? And I was like, yes. Yes, sir. And he was like, God dang, man. That thing scared the hell out of me, dog. Man, you should have recorded that thing. And then he proceeds to tell us. He was like, yeah, I was finna get in the shower. Yeah. It's like, I got naked. And then I turned the light on. And then I go in the shower and I see that thing. And he goes, I just screamed and threw my towel on the alligator. And I literally just ran out. And then he was like, it had to be peanuts.
Look, man, I still got videos from, because that alligator continued to travel on that day and got like 3 or 4 other people. Got Wilkes, got Josh Norman. I got all those on video. Too bad we didn't get Rivera on tape, but everybody else got. I'm glad you shared that story. But all that being said, Peanut, when did you know it was time to retire? Like, how did you know? I know you were injured your last year. Was it because of the injury? You just like, you know what? Super Bowl loss. I can't keep dragging my family here and there. What was it?
Yeah, I definitely the knee, the torn ACL, year 34 or a 13th season. I was 34 years old, 35, whatever. There was no way another team was going to bring me back. So I didn't even attempt to try. I was already had a somewhat of a bad knee anyway, mm-hmm. You know, going into my 13th season when I was in Carolina. So it was, yeah, I just, that was when I knew. The thing about retiring, though, is you never retire when you want to. There's only a group of a few individuals who can retire when they want to. And what I mean by that is, had I not torn my ACL, had I been healthy and we won Super Bowl 50, no doubt I would have retired. The people that retire the way they want to, in my opinion, are the ones, a lot of the ones, they went, you know, Ray Lewis is a prime example. I think he did it on his own terms.
John Elway.
John Elway, Peyton Manning. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was how I envisioned going out, winning a championship and just like, you know what? It took me 13 years. I finally got one. I'm out. And just ride off in the sunset. I wish I would have been able to do that. But unfortunately, Father Time and injuries, they play a large role in this. But what about you, though? When did you feel you knew it was time to retire? Because you went back to New Orleans.
Yeah.
And played another year.
Right. Well, I was ready to retire after the Super Bowl in Carolina. I thought we were just going to win, and then I could just, you know, ride off in the sunset. Me and you holding hands, just, you know, putting the helmets down together. We were just going to be out. I didn't want to – because I played 10 years at that point. I didn't care about much more than that. I thought it was going to be a perfect ending, and I could go out on my own terms, like you said. But then we lost the game, and I just – in my mind, I didn't think God was telling me, like, okay, I don't think this is it for you. And I played this game since I've been in fourth grade, and, like, a Super Bowl loss has got to be my last time I'm on the actual field playing on the grass. That would have been a terrible way to go for me, for as much as I put into this game. So I kind of just kept working out. Then my former teammate, Will Smith, got killed that offseason. And so I was back in funerals and all that other stuff, and being back around the Saints organization for the first time, kind of heavily. And Sean Payton started talking to me and, you know, wondering, like, what I was going to do. Did I, you know, possibility of maybe coming back? He had a plan or a vision or something. I'm like, I don't really know. I don't want to go back. And but I bit the bullet and I did. And it was the greatest thing for me, just because I got to go back home. I got to rekindle some great relationships with people back in that building and back in the organization. Yeah. And because of that, it all turned out the way it was supposed to anyway. So and then I went
did
back.
Did you
and
leave
then I,
yeah. Carolina? I mean, I'm sorry. Did you leave New Orleans, like, on bad terms?
Yeah,
with the team?
Yes, I did. I left. They had drafted a guy the year before, and then they wanted him to start being playing. And I was hurt, and so it's not like he really beat me out. They just kind of just put him in. And I felt very disrespected after giving the organization 8 years of everything that you have. And then, you know how it is. Like you said, Father Time is who it is. And people upstairs make decisions. And then they make the move. And then I go and, you know, beat them 3 out of 4 times in Carolina. We win the division twice. It was great. It was more of like the biggest, like, you know, middle finger.
Slap
right back at you, you know. Like, so
yeah, I'm going to show y'all. But don't you think when you play a former team, you have more motivation?
Oh, 1,000% you do. I mean, you want to
beat
them.
That player is like, man, I'm finna show y'all. Y'all never should have let me go. Y'all should have gave me the money, or you should have let me start.
Yeah, all of that.
I think teams know that too.
But, you know, that was all part of it. And, you know, you learn how to let bygones be bygones at the end of the day, and then you just keep it moving. And so being able to go back was really cool, Peanut, because, you know, it was like the 50-year anniversary for the New Orleans Saints that year. And I was one of, like, 3 players that was, like, on the all-50 team that were still currently playing. And so, you know, for my parents to get to go down on the field with my wife and my kids and be celebrated, it was really cool, because my wife was like, "Your dad, I've never seen him smile so hard when he was on the field getting recognized with all these other great players." So it's really cool to let everybody else do that. Now, enough about our careers. Let's talk about the after the career, what kind of happens, Peanut. And that is the transition. And so why do you think so many players have such a hard time transitioning from the game once they retire? I know just the other day on PTI, Booger McFarland was saying that he saw the game as a means to an end, and said that once the money didn't make sense for him anymore, it was time to go. So for him, it was monetarily. What is that transition period like, and why is it so tough, you believe?
I think for everyone, it's different. I think at the same time, for me, I feel like I was institutionalized.
Okay.
In the sense of, I've been doing it since 7th grade. So I had this schedule for so long, and I've been used to that schedule. And then my last play in the NFL was me falling down and, like, tearing my ACL. And that was like really difficult. Like, dang, that's literally the last play. And so fast forward, you're transitioning. I think I struggled in the sense of, I just didn't want to be done. Like, I still felt like I had more to give, and I was hyper competitive, super competitive. I still wanted to compete. I still wanted to play football, and I couldn't. So my mistake was, when I transitioned from league to regular life, I didn't give myself enough time off.
No time to decompress.
I didn't give myself any time to basically grieve my injury.
Yeah.
I didn't give myself enough time to just, like, celebrate my career and just take time and just kind of come down. I know for some guys, and when they do come back from, like, overseas, they do a tour or deployment, And I'm not speaking for everyone who has been overseas and been on deployments or whatnot, but from a few guys that I've talked to, they need a little bit of time to decompress to kind of get adjusted back to the regular world.
Yeah.
Because your mind is on something else when you're overseas, when you're in the sandbox. But then when you come back here, it's, I think people expect you just to be normal and just step back into society and just be normal. And I think that was what I did. And I should have just taken a step back, meaning take a year off, take 6 months.
Yeah.
And just figure out, what do I really want to do?
Yeah. What are you passionate towards?
And I didn't do that because I felt like I just had to keep going and keep going and keep doing things.
Why do you feel like you have to just keep going and keep going and keep going?
I'm wired that way. Like I'm high energy, high sprung. I don't want to sit down. I don't want to sit still. And that was probably my biggest mistake, was like I probably felt like I should have just sat down for 6 months to a year, or just take the season. Mm-hmm. Just take that season off and just decompress, just chill, figure out what you really want to do, hang out with the wife, hang out with the kids, be the stay-at-home dad. You know, I'm good now, but I think because I was just so go, it hurt me in a lot of ways. And if I could, whoever's listening, that would be my advice for someone who played a long career. Mm-hmm. Is just take 6 months and just figure out life and like, all right, now what's next? I had this amazing career. Now what do I really want to do? And I think that's why I'm envious of you, because you actually did that.
Yeah.
How long did you take off?
365 days to the day. I said, I'm
365 days to the day.
Yeah.
I
did absolutely nothing. Whatever I didn't do, I wanted to do something that day and I didn't get it done, I just do it the next day. It's okay. That was literally my mentality.
I've never been like that though. You know, and that's what I'm saying.
It was hard. It was hard. But I promised myself this is what I wanted to do. And I had people ask me, why don't you try and do this? Why don't you do this? And I'm like, I'm taking 365 days and do nothing. But the person that gave me that advice was the GM of the New Orleans Saints, Mickey Loomis. He told me that. He said, before you do anything, Roman, you need to make sure you take time. You need to decompress. Like, get away. And like, don't do anything. Especially if you can afford to take the time.
Yeah.
Don't do anything.
So what I really want to get to is one of the old school savvy vets, the wisdom that you have. Very knowledgeable about the game of football. Why in the hell do you get into TV instead of coaching?
well, that means I get to share it with more people, honestly. you know, as a coach, my dad's a coach, so coaching's in my blood. I don't deny that. And I know I could be a good coach, but I don't want to continue to give football my whole heart and my emotions because I know what it takes to win. And I know you got to be all in. And I know when I lose, what I'm like, I'm not always pleasant. I understand I'm not perfect. But for me, just to be able to talk the game has been so much more pleasant because I get to be around the game all the time, especially being in, you know, working with the SEC network. I'm talking college football all the time. And so college is just the gateway to the NFL. And, you know, I get to be around the game. I get to travel on the weekends. I got an awesome gig with the network. And it's been really cool. But I always believed that the media was the enemy. Like, that's what I was taught. You know, you got to be careful what you say to the media.
Me too.
You got to be careful with what you give them because they're going to change it and put it and twist it however they want to. And that's not who you want to be with. They were like the dark side. And now I'm part of the dark side. So it's a little...
Some of them are evil.
I know. Most of them are not evil. Most of them
are not evil. I will apologize to all those reporters. But when you're a young 22-year-old in the league, you're taught like...
Yeah, hey, that's the enemy.
They are the enemy.
Yes.
Like, that is what they stay away. Don't tell them nothing.
Yeah.
As I got older, I got to know a few media personnel in Chicago and was like, this person had my number and like I could give them an interview, but it was real. And they could critique me professionally and it didn't make it personal or anything like that. But there's a few people that are in it for themselves.
My only thing is that I can be critical, but as long as I'm fair, right? I'm fair and I'm honest. And as long as I tell it from what my eyes see, then like, how can you be mad? Fans take it personal, but players and coaches don't. They're just so much better about all that.
We got something in common with Louisiana, right? I went to school there. You played there professionally. And recently I got inducted to the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And then you got inducted into the Saints Hall of Fame.
Yep.
I was mad that I didn't actually get a ticket to the event because I wanted to see you at the event. I went to the party that you had.
Yeah.
And it was dope. Had an amazing time.
Thank you.
Amazing. I held your son the whole night. I put him to sleep. I just rocked him to sleep. Tell me about that night. Tell me about that experience.
Dude, it was cool. And the best thing about it was that it was a celebration of me and that all my accomplishments and that I actually felt appreciated by the organization that turned their back on me. And then I got to come back 3 years later and kind of let bygones be bygones. And then all of a sudden they give you your flowers, right? And so I was very appreciative of that I got to go in while I'm still here. Also, my kids are a little bit older and they actually understand it and they appreciate it. And they actually really, really thought it was cool. Like my son, for my older son for the first time, was like, "Dad, you're like good." Like to him, I'm just dad because he never got to see me play ball. But he was like,
right,
"Man, you're like good, Dad. Like that's really cool." Like, so I actually appreciated that. I appreciated that I got to take a picture with even Soul because he was just born. He was a baby, but he was still there. And so I got this picture, and so I have this memory. And for me, it was more important to thank those and to be proud and talk about those that actually put and invested into Roman. But for me, it was more of a celebration about my parents, my wife, my kids, my family, and really talking about all that they meant to me and that I wanted to celebrate them in this time when everybody wanted to celebrate me. So for me, that's what it was all about, Peanut. And it's really special. I got some pictures from it, but other than that, dude.
Yeah.
It was just good to have another party with my homies.
Lot
I mean, Chicago needs to do theirs right, bro. So then you can get yours too. And hopefully you'll be in the Hall of Fame and I get to go there to Canton with you and celebrate you and yours. So that's all I care about, bro. It's just, you know, the relationships that this game allows us to have is way more important than any play, any tackle, any interception that you'll ever remember, because those are the things that you carry with you. Like you can take a game ball, but it's just on the wall. It's just.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. But look, we got to pay some bills. And when we come back, we'll come back with some quick hitter questions.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Peanut, two-part question for you. What trait do you believe best defined you as a player in the NFL? The other part of it is, what trait best defines you now? Is it the same trait or is it a different trait?
I would say My superpower or trait would be manifestation.
Yeah. Okay. We've and talked I about could, this a little bit. Yeah. Go ahead.
I dive could into manifest it. whatever I thought, whatever I could think of or dream or whatever goal I would set, I obtained it. If it was something that I truly wanted, whether it be a Pro Bowl, you know, something individual based,
yep,
that I could
make it happen.
I could make it happen. And for the most part, all individual goals, you know, I wanted to get a master's degree. I wanted to graduate in 3.5 years. I wanted to get drafted on the first day. I wanted to run a 4.4 40. I wanted to make a Pro Bowl. I wanted to be all first team all pro. I wanted all these things that I told myself I would manifest this thing in my goals in my brain. And I obtained them. So I got a silly question for you. When did you start developing gray hair?
In eighth grade, I got my first gray hair, according to my barber. He told me, he was cutting my hair. He's like, "Dude, you got a gray hair up here in the back." And I was like, there's no way. He's like, oh yeah, I'm telling you, I'm up here, it's gray. I was like, well, are you going to pull it out or something? Like, you got to get rid of it, right? He's like, no, no, no. I heard that's bad luck. Like, if you do that, like two or three more come. So I was like, all right, well, just, you know, don't worry about it. Like, it's just one of them. And they literally been coming in ever since then. So whatever it is in, what, 13, 14?
13, 14.
Yeah, gray got hairs. Gray hair. And so that's why I've never dyed it. I won't do it because everybody that knows me since eighth and ninth grade have known me with gray hair or a little bit of gray hair. And I never wanted them to be like, oh, Roman made it. Oh, he changed.
When I met you at PAO, I thought you were the 13-year vet.
I know.
I swear.
I know.
I was like, wait, you look like Obama. You look like President Obama after one term.
So the funny thing is, bro, is that, so you know, you win the Super Bowl. This is another little great story. We got to get this in real quick. So, because you bring up Obama. We win the Super Bowl. All right. Win the Super Bowl. Obama comes up to me. He's like, hey, he daps me up. He's like, oh, you must be the old guy on the team. I'm like,
oh no.
Like, not at all. Everybody in the room dies laughing because I was just my fourth year in the league, bro. And he was like, oh, you must be the old guy on the team. Like, okay, man, I see you. I'm like, no, not at all. Like, not at all, sir. Sir?
I don't think you've ever told me that story. No,
he literally,
it's a wrap then.
The whole room died laughing. So then he keeps walking, shaking guy's hand. He meets one of my guys, Remy A. Adele, who had like this crazy mohawk, like straight mohawk, straight up. And he was like, hey, at least you ain't got this guy's haircut. I was like, yeah. I said, yeah, you know, you kind of looking like me though. You know what I mean? Real talk. Cause he started going real gray at that time too.
Hey, man.
So, hey, look, man, I felt cool cause Barack said more to me than he said to anybody else. All right. I got another one for you. Early in this season, we did a sit down and was on the podcast with Thomas Q. Jones. And so he thinks he deserves a lot more credit. I think he deserves all the credit for you perfecting the peanut punch.
Right.
You know, he said you would just constantly chase him down. It was all these other things. We got some video. I want to pull up the video for it. I want you to take a listen and then tell me what you think.
All right.
I think some of the peanut punch, I deserve some of the credit for that because because I have, actually, I have nerve damage in both of my elbows because him punching the ball out of my arms in practice every day, chasing me down. you know, so he practiced a lot of that peanut punch on me and irritated me a lot, but he also helped me make sure I'm holding on to the ball. So we helped each other.
Yeah, he's not lying. I think he and every other offensive person on the Bears, Carolina as well, they helped me perfect that peanut punch. It was something that, I don't know, I was just thinking outside the box, trying to be different. You know, I wasn't the big guy to hit you to separate you from the ball. I'm going to just punch it out. My very first NFL game, I got a peanut punch. I forced a fumble. It was something that I was intentional about doing it all the time. It was just, I thought about it. It was on my mind. It was, get the ball out. It was respect for your head coach to literally walk over to him like, hey, I need you to get the ball back right now. We got to win this game.
Also, another way to say it, Sean Payton, when we were in New Orleans, literally playing against Chicago Bears, he's like, look, guys, this week, no yak. I don't need anybody getting any extra yards. This guy, Peanut Tillman, I don't want to see the ball on the ground. I don't want to see it. And you still got the ball out. So it was like
– Reggie Bush.
Yeah, it still got the ball out. So it just was one of those things. It irritated a lot of people.
Yeah.
Peanut, I got one more question, and then I'm going to be done with you. Then you can ask me questions if you want to. When Charles Peanut Tillman is an old, crusty, ashy knuckle-having guy, what would you like people to say about Peanut Tillman's football career?
I would like them to say that Charles Peanut Tillman was a guy who didn't talk a whole lot. He didn't give the greatest speeches, but he came to work every day with his helmet and his lunch, and he just worked. You know, he wasn't the biggest. He wasn't the fastest. He was an underdog in life, and he always came out on top because he put the work in, loved his teammates, would do anything for his teammates. Because that's to me, that's what this game's about.
It really
this is about team and family. I would hope people would just say he was the ultimate team player. Same to you. When you're bald, because you're already old and crusty, what are people gonna say about Roman Harper?
For me, what I would love for them to say is that that I was a pro's pro. You know, I was constantly doing the little things right. I studied, I work hard. And that if I was a pro, like, that's the ultimate compliment for me, is that, man, he was a real pro. He was a dude. And I'm fine with that.
You know how we do the Mount Rushmore in the past? Who's on your personal Mount Rushmore?
Well, I got to put my dad up there because he was the first one to wear number 41. And I didn't even know that. And he's just a great dude. We've become so much closer as we've both gotten older. Just because I'm no longer just like his little son. You know, now he looks at me like a man with responsibility. And I can't have my dad up there without my mom. And then probably my wife, because she's been my biggest fan. She's my hardest critic. And then I would probably say it'd be unfair to put one of my coaches up there without the others. Coach Clark, my high school coach, means the absolute world to me. But I would just pick the University of Alabama up there instead, because I'm so Roll Tide through and through. Like, that's where I'm from. That's the state I'm at. Like, it means so much to me. So it's all in my background right now. So I would say those would be my four. So mom, dad, my wife, and the University of Alabama.
Okay.
Who's on your – did you tell me your personal – your Mount Rushmore?
My dad, and I'm not – I swear I'm not copying you.
Yeah, but
– my dad was – my pops was in the military, and as a kid, I thought my dad was Roadblock from G.I. Joe. You know what I'm saying? I just thought it was the coolest thing, him being in the Army and us moving overseas. So my pops was my hero. Yeah. Still is to this day. Love him to death. My mom, for her caring and loving personality, and just, I'm a mama's boy.
Yeah, for sure. Me too.
And she kind of gave me that grit. So those are two. I'd say number three would be a good friend of mine named John Wright. Great mentor, taught me a lot about the whole mental toughness. I think the last one is Jackie. I would say, because I think she's challenged me in so many ways that I didn't know. And when I played, she would, you know, she would send me these texts and it would just say, "Be amazing." And I don't think I really noticed how powerful those were until I stopped getting them because I stopped playing.
Yeah.
Biggest critic, didn't always want to hear it, but they're right. She was right. She is right. And biggest critic, I would say her.
Okay.
And that being said, we talk a lot offline. I think I know what this will be, but I want you to fill in the blank with this one. Right now, my life is blank.
I would say a blessing. And it's really truly because, you know, I'm a daddy daycare guy. You know me. In my opinion, bro, I'm top 3, top 5 dad in the country. Like, and right now, not having football, I'm all in on being a basketball dad. I take pride and joy in that every single day. I love picking my kids up. I love being involved. And all I'm trying to do is just be the best version of myself every day. I don't blame myself for all the mess ups anymore. So that's what I would say, man. My life is a blessing. I would ask the same thing. Your life, Peanut Tillman's life today is?
I'm comfortable.
I don't always know if that's a good thing.
No, it's... because I'm growing, I'm evolving.
You're learning to be comfortable. Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm comfortable now.
Okay.
I'm comfortable in the space that I'm in.
Well, I like that, because for a long time you were rat racing it. You don't know if you're trying to do this, you're trying to do that. You're chasing these things, and for you to say that I'm comfortable is a good thing. It's a good thing.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
All right. Well,
I'm comfortable.
Well, Peanut, thank you for having me, and. Thank you for coming on to my podcast and letting me interview you. So I appreciate it. Thank you to all the listeners out there. Me and Peanut probably went a little long. Hopefully we can edit this thing down. If can't, who cares? Tune in next week. It'll be even better. All right. I want to ask you guys to spread the word. Talk, tell a friend, to tell a friend, to tell another friend, to come out, check us out, listen to us, give us a rating, a review, and make sure you hit that button. Follow on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else that you listen to your podcast, iHeartRadio app. So thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you later. Peace.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.